Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ed Donahue. The release of WNBA star Brittany Griner in exchange for an arms dealer in Russia means American Paul Weyland is still being held in Russia on espionage charges. The Biden administration was pushing for the release of both of them. This is White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
It was a choice between bringing home one American or bringing home none. And we brought one home today.
South Carolina women's basketball coach Dawn Staley is a friend of Griner. She told the AP the women's basketball movement made this release happen.
Not a whole lot of people could have handled that situation. You know, but Brittany's strong. You know, Brittany is one of us. And, you know, I'm full. My heart is full knowing that she's coming home.
Paul Whelan's family says the Biden administration made the right decision by agreeing to the swap, but they're devastated Whelan remains behind. The House gave final approval to a bill protecting same-sex marriages. California Democrat Judy Chu says the idea behind the same-sex marriage bill comes after the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade.
The Supreme Court's actions this summer have shown us that we cannot take our rights for granted. No one should have to live in fear that a Supreme Court decision could invalidate their marriage in the blink of an eye.
The House has passed a defense bill that would rescind a coronavirus vaccine mandate for service members. It now goes to the Senate, where it's expected to pass easily and then to President Biden to be signed into law. Iran says it has executed a prisoner convicted for a crime allegedly committed during the country's ongoing nationwide protest. Nearly 66 years after the battered body of a young boy was found stuffed inside a cardboard box, Philadelphia police say they finally uncovered the boy's name, Joseph Augustus Zarelli. The homicide investigation remains open, and authorities say they hope publicizing Joseph's name would spur a fresh round of leads. This is AP News.
Paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge. But it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE. 855-51-BIBLE.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Judge Jennifer Darrow is defending herself after words she gave a man she convicted for domestic abuse last week 2 days to report to jail. In that time, sheriff's deputies in Illinois say Michael Liu broke into his in-laws' home and shot at them and stabbed them several times. Darrow's Wisconsin Supreme Court campaign says most judges actually give abuse convicts more time to report to jail. Wisconsin taxpayers will likely have to pay state taxes on any student loan debt forgiven. Some tax professionals are telling people to report loan forgiveness as income, even if they don't get a 1099-C form from their loan servicer. In sports, the Bucks beat Sacramento last night. College volleyball Sweet 16 play today. Wisconsin hosts Penn State and Marquette takes on top-seeded Texas. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
In a long sky, yeah. It's a car moving along the highway. You moving to California with me. I'm almost 2,000 miles from my home, sweet home. Yeah. 2,000 miles from arms that bore me, 2,000 miles from my sweet home, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. A reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends. We are a growing show on a growing network, and we could use your help spreading the word. And so I am so excited for our next guest. He is the Milwaukee historian, John Gerda, because he has been the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. He has published 22 books on the city's history, including Milwaukee, A City of Neighborhoods, Cream City Chronicles, The Making of Milwaukee, his latest book, Brewtown Tales. And I also found out this week, I didn't know that you were a regular on Around the Corner with John McGivern, but we also had John McGivern on this week. And so, both Johns, 1 week. And as of last week, after 29 years, you're hanging up the column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, so we thought this would be a good opportunity to get you on the show. Welcome, John Gerda.
Thanks for having me. So you've had John McKibben on, Lois Maurer, who was our producer for Around the Corner. She said, Cheryl said, two Johns, no waiting.
How much fun was it to do that show with him?
It was a lot of fun. I was front-loaded. You know, I would do all the research beforehand, and early on, we began to have kind of spontaneous conversations, and there was a lot of sort of dead air, you know, you know what? So what happened was I scripted it, you know, so I had to memorize it. And then John, he would have to memorize the cues, you know, kind of the outros. And then he figured out that he had his cell phone. He could put the questions on there and say, oh, and what was the population at that time? So it became a lot easier for both of us, and a lot more seamless. And it was fun. You know, we would do maybe two takes, sometimes three, wherever we were for 9 years. So it's 115 shows, something like that. But then for me, a real pleasure of that job was when I was through taping with John and Lois, I would go biking. You know, so it was all around the state, from Ashland down to the southwest corner to, you know, around the Milwaukee area. So I got to see a lot of the state, and I'm as much a Wisconsinite as I am a Milwaukeean. So that was a real pleasure.
Yeah, and that's because I listened to one of your interviews, I think from a couple years ago with WPR, after you had done a Milwaukee Magazine interview. And so your mother's from the Driftless region, right? Near La Crosse. Yep. So you really, as much as you are known for Milwaukee, have gotten to do history all across the state.
No, I'm bi-coastal. You know, my dad's Polish from the south side of Milwaukee, so I'm on Lake Michigan, and my mom was from the Driftless around Coos Valley, Wisconsin, near the Mississippi. So I kind of touch both sides of the state.
Absolutely. So there's so many different ways I want to take this conversation, but so you're hanging up the column for now after 29 mm-hmm. years, but this isn't retirement, right?
Oh, no. I've been getting all kinds of retirement. I got a call this morning from a county supervisor saying we want to do a citation for you retiring. And I had to explain to him that I'm not retiring. No, the Journal Sentinel gig, that was 2 days a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you know, as another freelancer, you know, you kind of patch together a living for all these years. So I'll keep writing. You know, we just had a Jones Island documentary that was premiered on Milwaukee PBS. You know, the Brewtown Tales book is out. Working on a series of tours, publishing the tours of Milwaukee, doing a lecture series. We can get it together, kind of about Black history in Milwaukee. So that's a, I've got a lot of things I need doing. So I had to tell the supervisor, thank you very much. I much appreciate the thought, but a little premature.
A little premature. Well, and to say what you just said, as far as you've made a career out of being a historian. And when you went and got your master's from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, because you were an English major for your undergrad, correct?
Right, yep.
And then you went and got your master's in history. And so did you think that you could be a historian and not have to be a professor?
No, not at all. You know, especially with a master's degree, and that's as far as I got. And I didn't want to go any farther. I was working, and I kind of wanted to get back out, kind of in the world and writing. So I was never tempted by academia. But no, it's been 50 years. You know,
yeah.
Back in 72 is when I first kind of went freelance. And to think that I've been able to do this all these years is my mom would be shocked. You know, whenever there'd be somebody retiring from the Journal, which was our paper before they merged back in 95, you know, she would say, I see Gerald Kloss is hanging it up. Maybe you should talk to those people. She could never believe, you know, that this could be a career. And fortunately, I have a patient wife, Sonia, you know, who she tells people, no, she would ask sometimes what my backup plan was. There was no backup plan. No, there was no other net.
So have you always just kind of trusted the process of knowing that there was going to be another book or another TV show or a collab, or just kind of knowing that by being the kind of expert on Milwaukee's history of where we've been and potentially how that can inform where we're going, that you just trusted that there was going to be opportunities to continue to write and talk about that?
Basically followed my nose.
Yeah.
And there was no inside to come to. So actually, a lot of what made this career possible, is I would do commission work for nonprofits and for businesses, you know, so that that pays a whole lot better than freelance work, as you know. So I've done histories of Miller Brewing, Northwestern Mutual, twice. So repeat business, 25 years apart. I did two books on Northwestern Mutual. Lattice, Wee Energies, Harnischweger, which is, you know, kind of reincarnated as Komatsu. So I would write these book length, you know, histories of these companies, as well as Forest Home Cemetery, Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church, Frank Lloyd Wright. So I got to hang around to Taliesin. So over the years, I've gotten to visit a whole lot of different worlds, and kind of someone described as building little houses by the roadside. You know, so kind of pass those and say, "Oh yeah, I worked on that one." So those commission jobs, you know, were essential to me being able to kind of fund, you know, the more community oriented sorts of things. And over time, you know, developed enough, you know, enough body of work and enough contacts so I could raise money for things like the Making of Milwaukee or City of Neighborhoods, or most recently the Jones Island documentary. So yeah, it's been. I've always said that. Not recently said, you know, that if I were to write a memoir, it would be 50 years of 1099s. I have not had a W-2 since 1972.
Wow, that is incredible. We're talking to Milwaukee historian and writer John Gerda about all things of his career, but also Milwaukee. And so, do you feel like there's still more things for you to learn about Milwaukee?
Oh, sure. Or at least ways to package it.
Okay.
The TV is more interesting to me lately than writing. I just did a show called People of the Port for Milwaukee PBS that just premiered last week. And that was a half-hour look at just a fascinating slice of real estate in Milwaukee. Everything from the largest Indian village in Milwaukee to, for 50 years, a Polish fishing village. So there are those stories to tell. And yes, I'm always learning stuff. Just yesterday, I was looking for something else. I do a back page thing for Milwaukee Magazine. I take a historic photograph and do a 300-word essay. And I was looking for something else and came across this half page story about the Menominee Valley from 1898, you know, which I'd never seen before. And they're talking about, you know, people searching through the piles of refuse for tin to scrap, and the jubilant cry of the factory whistle at quitting time, and the tin pail crowd that kind of streams out of the valley. So yeah, there's always stuff. stuff. You know, we're always making more history, so the mind is inexhaustible.
Well, John, now that you're stepping away from your column, but you're not retiring, like many other reporters in Milwaukee, whenever something came up about the history, it's like, call Gerda. We need to talk to John Gerda.
I still answer my phone.
You do. So reporters can still continue to bother you as time goes on.
Yeah, people are not reluctant.
And I said this before, John, and I mean this sincerely, that Making a Milwaukee is one of my favorite books in the world. I've given it as a Christmas present many, many, many times, and the series as well is wonderful.
Yeah, we're now in the fourth edition, you know, so it's it's update. Yep.
So as far as if you had to pick, what was the golden era of Milwaukee?
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era. Nope. There are no golden days. There are no good old days. You know, I said to my kids when they were growing up, you know, they complain about whether it was adolescence or they're 5 years old. There is something good and something bad about every single age, you know, whether you're 7 months or seven decades. And the same thing's true about a city's history. You know, so you think about, you know, the good old days of the 1890s when life was more carefree and we cared about each other and we walked everywhere. You know, look at the river, how polluted it was. Yeah. Look at the coal smoke that kind of settled this pall over the entire city. So it's always it's human life is yin yang, you know. It's always this mixture of darkness and light, you know. So there is no golden period I would look back to as kind of, this is where, you know, Milwaukee got it and we should all go back there. It's not the way
the world works. But as far as you know, pivotal moments, as far as like the timeline and maybe even just of the last century, like, what do you think the biggest shifts have been in the city politically, or kind of like the milestones that we've hit that we should all kind of like keep in mind as we try to continue to improve on the city?
The biggest pivot is 1910, when socialists won the mayor's office and a majority of common council seats. And that ended a period of graft, corruption, and just, you know, downright self-dealing. Milwaukee was just as dirty as Chicago on a bad day. You know, so it was, you know, Milwaukee really was. I have a talk called How the Socialists Saved Milwaukee. Yeah, really did. Now it's become kind of the S word, except for Bernie, kind of American politics. But they were excellent governors. And what animated them, what motivated them, was concern for the public good. You know, public enterprise, you know, was the kind of the term they constantly used. So, you know, Dan Holland got his picture in the cover of Time magazine back in 1936, Milwaukee's mayor from 16 to 40. And Time called Milwaukee perhaps the best governed city in the U.S. So these guys knew what they were doing. And there were women too, but it was largely guys back then. So 1910's a pivot. And there are certainly, you know, that heritage, you know, Frank Zeidler stepped down in 1960, so it's quite a while ago now, but for most of 50 years we had socialist mayors, and I've argued that that's kind of part of Milwaukee's civic subconscious. It's still there, you know, it's threatened, it's fragile, but it's still there, that kind of that mutuality, mutualism, that kind of concern for the common good, I think is still a part of our DNA. Other pivots, certainly one huge one was that period from 79 to 83 when we lost a quarter of our manufacturing jobs. Mm. And that was, but certainly other cities were harder hit, but that had a huge impact, especially on Milwaukee's minority community. You know, in the 50s, actually until about 1970, black workers had a higher proportion of production jobs than white workers. And that meant union jobs in a union town. So you had people joining the middle class, and then just the ladders kind of pulled out from under them with that deindustrialization. So that's a big shift.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, I actually want to talk about some of the historical women of Milwaukee. Our guest for this half hour is historian John Gerda. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Get myself together.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 37 this afternoon under cloudy skies. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Lows around 30. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. A mixture of precipitation likely. Daytime highs approaching 33. 1 to 3 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest this half hour is historian John Gerda, who is the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. And in the previous segment, before the commercial, we were talking about some of the mayors and men who have shaped Milwaukee. But who were some of the women that are notable historical figures that helped Milwaukee be what it is?
Two heroines of mine are part of the Jewish community, and they are Golda Meir and Lizzie Kander. And Golda, obviously, you know, she was Prime Minister of Israel, so she's a big deal. Got lots of things named after her here. But she grew up here. She came here at the age of 8 and stayed until she was in her 20s. So her formative years were spent here in Milwaukee. And she was very active in both the Zionist and the socialist circles here in Milwaukee. So she was part of, you know, that ferment, you know, back in the first decades of the 20th century. So certainly she was a heroine. And then Lizzie Black Kander was someone of German-Jewish background. And there was kind of a gulf between the Eastern Europeans who came here back in the 1880s, who were kind of the great unwashed, you know, kind of is how they were sometimes stereotyped. And she was affluent, kind of from the German side, the assimilated side, and she ended up opening something called The Settlement, which was like Jane Addams' Hull House in Chicago, you know, come one, come all, and for everything, everything from Yiddish newspapers to a savings bank to a library branch. And that became the Jewish Community Center. And to raise money for her settlement, she did. She taught cooking classes, and she would put the right ingredients, you know, very easy to follow. And the result was a settlement cookbook, which sold, you know, well over a million copies. And I think it was no longer in print, but that was a really big deal. So Lizzie, you know, Lizzie and Golda are really, you know, very, very prominent figures in Milwaukee's history on of the women in Milwaukee. Maida Berger, who was the wife of Victor Berger, who was a socialist stalwart here. You know, she was very active in her own right. And going way back, Josette Juneau, who was Solomon's wife. You know, she was a Parma nominee by ancestry. And even though it meant the city was not, the fledgling city was being transformed before her very eyes, she acted as a midwife. She was kind of a hostess, you know, for the early Europeans who came in. So she was a towering figure as well. So there is representation, you know, not as egalitarian as it should be, but, you know, there are certainly some notable women in Milwaukee's past.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, you've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've had some real clunkers from from people who you expect are going to be wonderful. Has there ever been one where you were just like, this did not turn out like I hoped that it would?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Aside from the ones who give one-word answers, you know, kind of, yes, I don't know. You know, that's just so you're thinking a half hour on your 5 minutes and you're done. I did a book about Bayview called Bayview, Wisconsin, back in 1979. And what I would do is a lot of interviews with politicians and clergy, you know, people who you would expect to know the community well. And I was doing an interview with the pastor, a post-lunch interview with the pastor of Bayview's biggest Catholic church. And there was kind of a lull in the conversation, and he's nodding, and he's nodding, and he fell asleep.
Oh, that was to really reinforce your confidence as an interviewer, right?
Yeah, boy, did I feel stimulating.
Oh my gosh!
I think I cleared my throat, or you know, kind of dropped my pen, or something like that. turn off the tape recorder really loud. He kind of sort of funny came to. I won't provide his name, but you know, people
may be able to figure it out.
yeah, right.
So your newest book, Brewtown Tales: More Stories from Milwaukee and Beyond, is out now. But what are some of the highlights of some of your favorite stories that are included in the new book?
These are largely Journal Sentinel columns, but not only. Included a story I did for Milwaukee Magazine about my years as a barfly on Milwaukee's South Side at Big John's Tap, which is one of my favorite pieces in there. But there are 80 essays, largely bite-sized. They run, you know, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500 words through there. Some of the favorite ones, it's interesting. Some of them, my favorite ones are not so much historical. But one is a trip I took on Highway 12, coming from around the corner. We're shooting around the corner in Eau Claire. And I was going to bike, but it was raining, so I took Highway 12 instead of 94 and just sort of fell in love with this sort of slow road home that you can duplicate, you know, any place else in Wisconsin. That's a favorite one. I've done that at readings. Another was the safer inside was the jargon, the motto when COVID first hit. So saner inside, certainly, but I did safer inside, and I did a column called Saner Outside, which was kind of a description of following the progress of the spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. And that was a chance to really observe nature closely and to kind of get it down in writing. So those are two favorites. But then there's one called A Socialist Citadel, which kind of describes the backstory of Milwaukee socialism. Certainly essays about segregation in Milwaukee, about Black Lives Matter in Milwaukee, so things that are topical as well. So it doesn't lack for variety.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably, as long with some of the other ones, might be Christmas gifts this year. And I appreciated that if you want to not necessarily make Jeff Bezos richer, but want to keep your purchase in the Wisconsin economy, you can buy it at shop.wisconsinhistory.org/Brewtown Tales, because it was Wisconsin Historical Society Press that published it, right?
Correct.
Absolutely.
And that's a great building to visit, too, the Wisconsin Historical Society.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. They're across from the Union.
Everything that they do, I'm so constantly impressed and happy that we have the Wisconsin Historical Society and John Gerdach, because you're not retiring. So now that you've made your debut on this show, I'm sure there's going to be many, many opportunities where we're like, let's get John on the show. He can explain this to us.
Call Gerdach.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We will link the Jones Island PBS documentary and the new books and your website on our website for today's blog post. But John Gerdach, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, Kristen, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, what would you do if you couldn't take a 2-hour flight and you had to take a train? Would you protest? I'm surprised the French aren't protesting, because that's what's happening there. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
In the hands of God. Put all their trust in the hands of God.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents.
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. The Federal Trade Commission is suing to block Microsoft's $69 billion takeover of video game company Activision Blizzard. A judge unsealed a dropped bomb threat case against the California gay bar shooting suspect a year before allegedly killing five people. Here's the AP's Jackie Quinn.
The lawyers for Anderson Aldridge, who identifies as non-binary, say the suspect won't be able to get a fair trial in the nightclub killings because of these documents about violent threats Anderson allegedly made to family members. It was June of last year. Grandparents were allegedly threatened with a loaded gun and told they were going to die. The case was dropped for unknown reasons and the documents sealed until the media fought to have them made public.
Documents describe Aldridge telling frightened grandparents of firearms and bomb-making material in their basement, vowing not to allow them to interfere in plans to kill on a mass scale. I'm Ed Donahue.
Paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month. And that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE. 855.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. It's been a good year for Wisconsin, the state dipping below 3% unemployment in the last 12 months, the current rate 3.3%, but a worker shortage still projected in the coming years. Amy Pekacek, secretary designee for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, tells the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel there are roughly 2 job openings for every job seeker in the state, so Wisconsin trying to re-engage people who've been out of the workforce for a number of reasons, including incarceration. There are currently 10 job centers and correctional facilities helping inmates get employment once they're released. Richland Center community members frustrated with the proposed closing of the UW Richland campus. Supporters say some of the reasons for declining enrollment are due to the UW system's lack of financial support, drastic reductions in faculty and staff, and no marketing or strategic plans. They'll forward a petition to Governor Evers, UW System President Jay Rothman, and area lawmakers. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
To As Goes Wisconsin, no matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app or on a podcast later today or later this week, maybe this weekend. Thanks for tuning in. And if you miss any part of today's show, you can always go back and listen to it as a podcast. And so you can find that on asgoeswisconsin.com/podcast.
Newly revamped.
Yeah. I was with my person yesterday. And so we were doing a little bit of a facelift to the website. You can also find us on Apple and Spotify and the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Lots of ways to listen and follow us on social media because, you know, we're still posting stuff that's beyond just the live stream of this show. I'm still doing some TikToks and some short videos, though not as many as I'd like to be doing. But, you know, we're still just plugging along every day. And, you know, it was so interesting talking to John who is not retiring, John Gerda, historian, and not retiring, but hanging up the column, the Journal Sentinel column. And one of the reasons I do love, if you go read his kind of farewell that was published last week in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, one of the reasons he subtly lists as to why he's not doing it anymore is how much they didn't pay him. They did pay him, but it was like, you know, as you remember, the freelance,
yeah,
you know, the per word, per article.
Not a big moneymaker.
Not a big moneymaker, but he also lists that the Ideas Lab, David Haynes, editor, is retiring, who is my boss over there. And also announced this week, George Stanley is retiring. Who
big
is
changes.
The editor-in-chief and has been since 2015, but he has worked for the paper for 43 years. And, you know, while Jane is definitely my work mom / work wife, which is a little weird and incestuous, but, you know, whatever. Those two and the time that the little over a year I've spent at Journal Sentinel doing the video columns that I do over there, certainly both of those men have been my work dads. And I'm pretty sad. I get it. I get that they're both are of the age, or they have kids that they want to spend more time with, and grandkids they want to spend more time with. But they are the institutional knowledge that they have, and the amount of time I before I actually started, and it was still kind of like, all right, well, we like what you do, but we don't know how to fit you into the newsroom.
We don't know what to do with you.
And I had coffee with George at the Red Arrow Starbucks. And I think we must have just sat there for like 3 hours just talking. And so to both of those men, how many stories they have in their back pocket because they lived it, right? They lived reporting the politics and the businesses and the Tommy Thompsons and all of the ways that Wisconsin has shifted and changed in their career, and they were responsible for reporting on it. And so just getting to sit and talk with them, because especially because I was gone for a while. And so even stuff in more recent history that I now doing the jobs that I do have to go up and research and read about instead of having them, though, to just kind of explain it.
And put it into context.
And to put it into context is you know, has been wildly valuable for me, and I think very valuable for everyone who works at Journal Sentinel. And so certainly big shoes to fill.
Well, I hope both John and David realize that reporters all over southeastern Wisconsin are going to go call Stanley because we need background on something. And so they're not going to be off the hook. They might not be as willing to pick up the phone as the lovely John Gerda, but I'm sure there are going to be people reaching out to them because, as you said, the institutional knowledge that they have and the context in which they can put things is invaluable.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's a reminder, especially in something like a newsroom, that David will say, you know, for years, decades, nothing changed in the newsroom. Everything, you know, the grind of the paper was the grind of the paper, but as far as the changing evolution of how we do the paper, for decades was the same.
Yes.
And then in the last 12 years, it changes all the time.
And it just blew up.
And, you know, the double-edged sword of digital and everything that means and what that's done to newspapers, for better or for worse, but the need to keep up with the times as far as how social media changes and SEO and all these things of how people, as the readers, get their information and get their news, and how is the paper, you're responsible for not only doing good reporting, which Milwaukee Journal Sentinel does do very good reporting. Like the journalists who are employed there, I've learned so much from them. But it's also the distribution of it that takes a whole different skill set and team to be able to do something beyond print a paper and keep up with how things are changing. That is a completely different skill set than reporting the news.
Yeah, there's no question. And I do want to just emphasize, and there's so much hate against the media right now, but having a hometown-based newspaper is critically important for that hometown. You might not think it is, but without someone to keep an eye on our politicians and our boards and all of those things, there's all kinds of hanky-panky that can get up to.
Well, and I think about that, you know, so much of what we do on this show is editorialize the reporting that journalists are doing, right?
That others do.
And it's between Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, WPR, Wisconsin State Journal, and the local journalists that we have that do such a good job that, you know, doing a 3-hour radio show doesn't leave a lot of time for me to go find like stories firsthand. So a lot of it is being able to rely on the reporting that they do and break it down in a different way, offer my opinion on it, provide a firsthand radio interview of some of the people that they, you know, but a lot of times our guests that we invite on, it's because I read about them in, you know, in a different person's report.
Yes.
And so I know that sometimes Gannett, as a, you know, published and as an entity, there's a lot of valid criticism that you can direct towards Gannett and how much money their executives make versus rounds of cuts and the conglomerate of gobbling up newspapers.
Little independent newspapers
and stuff. But as far as at least I can certainly say firsthand that the work that Journal Sentinel is doing and the reporting that they do is a reflection of them, regardless of how you feel about Gannett. And certainly you should subscribe to them. And every time you hit that paywall, I know it's annoying, but there's always deals as far as, you know, $1 a month for 6 months and entry deals to get you in the door, because supporting local media is really, really important.
The investigative reporting that they do is award-winning.
I mean,
is groundbreaking. And I could think of some stories before you even got here about daycare centers that were set up that actually didn't have any enrollees that were getting paid by the state. I mean, they've done numerous long form, the PFAS piece that they just did.
They almost won a Pulitzer in this last year. They were nominated for the landlord fire, like the fire in the rental units. And who won was Washington Post for the January 6th reporting. But continuously, the reporting that comes out of Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is excellent. And that is, a reflection, I would say, on the respect and passion that George Stanley has for journalism. And so we're going to get him on the show. I told him what he announced this week. I pinged him and I said, well, can I interview you? He goes, well, now everyone's pinging me to try to get me on the show. I was like, well, we'll do that for the holidays once you get through. Because I think it's right at the end of the year that he's going to step down. David Haynes is stepping down next week. So my life's going to be very different over there.
Missing your two work dads.
My two work dads. But yeah, so if you do not subscribe to any of the USA Today Wisconsin papers, I highly recommend doing so, because they do a very good job. And you should support local media.
And we need them.
So this caught my eye. Switching gears. This caught my eye because I feel like, one, this certainly wouldn't work in the U.S. But I'm just trying to imagine, you know, as much as we rely on the convenience of things. But could you imagine the riots if Congress passed a new law saying you no longer can take a flight if it's under 2 hours?
So I can't fly Milwaukee to Minneapolis. I have to drive Milwaukee
to Minneapolis. Well, no, you'd have to take a train. And the reason why this would not work is because our train system past the East Coast is not that comprehensive.
We're not set up for that.
But in France, they just got the go-ahead to start doing this. And so France, earlier this week, the European Commission allowed the country to chug along with its short-haul domestic flight ban. So basically, only air routes with a reliable train alternative that takes less than 2.5 hours will be cut. So basically, if there is a train that can take you from Paris to Lyon or Paris to Marseille, although I don't know if Paris to Marseille is... I mean, France is a much smaller...
Geographically,
a much smaller country than us. So trying to imagine...
What would be more than 2.5?
What is more than 2.5 hours on a flight? But I saw this, and it's... I mean, I like the times that I take trains. They're great. And honestly, a lot of times when you think about the... I've thought about this a lot when I lived in San Francisco or L.A. And there is no train connecting those two, the two major cities in California. They've tried, but there's, you know, the high-speed rail that they've tried to push through just hasn't happened. And sometimes I would argue the drive itself is about, depending how fast you drive on the 5 and if there's an accident or not, you know, it's like 6-ish hours. So
it's a cruise.
It's a drive versus a very short plane ride. But sometimes when you think about getting to the plane in time, and because there were certainly times where that flight would be delayed like 2 hours, and you're like, well, at the time I got to the airport, I waited for my flight, I did the flight, I got off, and then drove to wherever I needed to go in LA, because God knows the traffic there is a mess. And you're like, well, how much time did I actually save?
Maybe 20 minutes.
And so, but I'm just trying to think, you know, Americans losing their mind. Like, if you couldn't fly from like Philly to Washington, D.C., or D.C. to New York, or even Boston to New York, and all these kind of like short puddle jumper flights, and this doesn't even include private jets. This is just commercial, short commercial flights. I do not think this would fly, pun intended, in the U.S.
Well, and I'm surprised because the French really don't seem to have too many problems with going on strike.
Oh, no. Right? This is a country that loves to protest.
They kind of like to, you know, can you hear the songs of angry writers? So I'm surprised that they're not really is this an environmental consideration?
It is.
Okay.
And so, but I think the criticism is, does this really make enough of a dent to be worth the inconvenience of it? But they're not stopping there. The transport minister, Clément Beaune.
I'm sorry, who?
So the funny thing about this is before Mike, in my last relationship, it was a Frenchman from the south of France, from Aix-en-Provence. And in that relationship, I took multiple at Duolingo. I tried to take multiple French classes. It really didn't stick. So reading this article and trying to pronounce the things was like, Clément Beaune?
Say it really fast.
Clément Beaune.
Parfait.
He also wants to slap taxes and restrictions on private jets to reduce the use of those gas-guzzling transportation devices. And so it'll be interesting. I mean, they're certainly taking a lead on this, and I don't know if it would stick in America. I think there would be a lot of people very upset if they couldn't take their private jets or a 30-minute flight from Milwaukee to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, when we come back, we still have one more segment. We're going to talk to Vicky Pachel, which I have to figure out if that's how to pronounce her name, about the Castle Family Christmas in Wautoma. Stick with us.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really missed you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 37. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 30 tonight. Overcast skies. Overcast skies again tomorrow. Mixed precipitation likely. High temperatures reach up to 34. 2 to 4 inches of snow tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM. Waukesha's only news talk station.
Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. Reminder that we love hearing from you. If you have a topic that you think we should cover or an idea for a guest we should have on or any feedback for us, you can always email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. And one of the things we're trying to do throughout December is highlight different community programming, shows, holiday concerts that are happening across the state, because it is such a fun time of year to see live shows. And so today we have the executive director at the Macomb Brooks PAC in Wautoma to talk about a show that's happening this Saturday. Welcome, Vicki Pichel.
Oh, thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
Yes. And so is that Wautoma behind you?
It is not. That's Wapaka.
That's Wapaka.
But okay. It's the closest I could find for this. But yeah, that's the Chena Lakes in Wapaka, and that's the Chief Wapaka in the background.
There you go. All right. Well, so what can people look forward to this weekend?
Well, on Saturday, December 10th at 7 o'clock, we have the Cowisils Family Christmas. And the Cowisils are a group that started in the 1960s, and they were a family. And there are like 6 or 7 little kids in the group and their mom. And they were the model for the Partridge Family TV show back in the day.
Oh, wow.
So you have all these little kids and their mom, and they start singing these songs, and they had some hits. And you're probably way too young, Kristen, but honestly, there's Hair from the musical. They did that. They did this really cool song called Indian Lake. Which I remember when I was a little kid, and I can see Jane going, yeah.
I remember this so well.
Yeah. And they have another one that's like one of my favorites, and I didn't know they did this until I went on YouTube and I looked at some of their stuff, but it's called The Rain, The Park, and Other Things. And it's about the flower girl. I love the flower girl, you know, da-da. But anyway, you got to go to YouTube because I'm not going to sing it. But they're going to do some of those things, and then also Christmas songs. They've been down in Branson at the Andy Williams Moon River Theater, and they've been there for a month doing Christmas shows. So they're going to pack up, come on up here, and do a Christmas show in Wautoma.
Vicki, for people who don't know, I mean, before there were the Osmonds and before there were the Jackson 5, it was the Cowisils.
There were the Cowisils, yeah. Yeah, and if you go on YouTube and see these pictures, it's like there are all these little kids. Susan is still in the group, and she was like 7 when she joined the group. And so you can see her with her little tambourine, and she's still in the group. I think there are 3 of the original members in the group. But then they've got kids, I believe, and Susan's husband is the drummer. So it's a very much a family affair.
So the original group in the 60s, they were all siblings. And so now 3 of the siblings are still part of it, but they've included their kids or husbands or wives to be a part of the group. But so how many people perform?
You know, I think 5, maybe 5 or 6.
That's so fun. Yeah. And so it's a mix of the classics, their classics, and then also Christmas music.
Yeah.
Did the sister?
So it'll be fun. And we're going to have an ugly Christmas sweater contest too. So people who are coming are encouraged to wear their ugly Christmas sweater, and we're going to have a prize for the ugliest.
So how do you judge a criteria? What's your criteria for the who gets to decide what is the ugliest Christmas sweater?
Well, maybe that's a good question, but I'm going to be the judge, so I get to do that.
Send your bribes to Vicky.
Yes, yes.
Do you have an ugly Christmas sweater to wear?
Oh, I do. Oh, I do.
Are you going to spoil it for us, or do you need to have it be a surprise?
Oh, well, I can describe it.
Okay.
It is very, very much vintage. It looks like something Grandma used to wear like 40 years ago. It's got the Santa, it's got the tree, it's got the reindeer, it's got holly berries on it. And I mean, it's got everything going.
It's got a lot. It's loud. It's a loud sweater.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It's gaudy.
Vicky, what else is coming up at the center, into December and even into next year?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that. We've got, we take a break in January, so we don't come back until February, but Sunday, February 19th at 3:00, we have Roll On, a tribute to Alabama. So it's a group out of Minnesota, and they do all the Alabama hits. So that'll be fun.
So is most of the programming that you guys have at McComb Brooks, is it mostly concerts, or is it also sometimes plays and musicals?
We do mostly music, but we have had plays and shows like that. They're just a little harder to find for our venue. We don't have an in-house group of people who perform, so it's a little harder for us to find them. But what also makes us as unique is we're connected to the school. So we also do educational things out of the theater. So we have programs for like all the county schools in fall and in spring. So invite them to be part of the performing arts. And then also we have a summer theater, and the Prairie Fire Children's Theater come from Minnesota, and they're in residence for a week, and they help our community kids. And this year we're going to put on Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, fun. That's so great.
Yeah. It's so important. Yeah. It's so important to have an arts facility like yours in a community like Wautoma.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's really unique, and it's been there 30 years, and the history is kind of cool behind it, too. The donations came from two ladies in Wautoma, and they gave the money to build a theater. Two ladies.
Oh, wow. That's so great. Well, where can people find, if people are interested in any of the future shows or in this Saturday's show, where can they get more information to get tickets?
McCombrookspac.com. Or you can call our box office. It's 920-787-2189. We are there this week from 10 to 2 every day. And then before the show, we get there at 3. We do have tickets available. So if you want to do something Saturday, come on up.
But we have our Christmas party, our civic media Christmas party, but otherwise I might be tempted to have my first Council family Christmas debut and listen to their show, because it sounds like it's a really fun show.
And Wautoma is a great place. I mean, you can come there. We've got two really, really great supper clubs. I know people are into that. So you can go, like, if you were going to come to the Roll-On show, that's a matinee show. So then you can go out to a supper club after that. We have Silvercrest and the Moose Inn. They're both awesome. And you can stay at Borders and, have a nice little time away.
Have a nice little Wautoma night. All right. Well, thank you so much, Vicky, for joining us today. We will link all the information of how you can see the Cowsills Family Christmas in our episode blog at asgoeswisconsin.com. And that'll about do it for us today. We'll come back tomorrow, Friday, TGIF. And we're halfway through, we're almost halfway through December already. That's like crazy. All right. Well, stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian or the Chad Holmes Show. And come back tomorrow when we'll do it all again. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Wishing well, the world wouldn't have to go away.
Women Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.